Chris,
life...
it's great to see you.
Yeah, it's good to see you too, Matt. How's life been? Busy, Matt, I suspect.
We're very, very busy. We are 1 week away from Black Hat for everyone who's listening to this. You might already be there, maybe. I'm not sure when this one will get released, but...
We're now using the robot to edit and publish, so I figure about 35 minutes or so after we record this, will be getting pushed out to the interwebs.
So by the time everyone hears this, next week we'll be in Black Hat. Please come and find Chris and or myself. We might be together at some points as well, so you might find one and find us both, but regardless, please come and say hi if you're a listener. Would love to... you know, see you and say what's up and all sorts of things. Well, please do. Please come by and say hi. It would be great to meet some of our listeners out there, as well as, you know, rap about some of the cool stuff that we talk about here.
Yeah, I'm super excited. We're doing a workshop with Black Hills Information Security and our friends at the Digital Defense Institute. So we got a suite in Mandalay Bay. We've had over 200 people register.
That's awesome.
I am a little terrified. I think the suite probably holds 50 people at a time.
I was about to say, I'm not familiar with how big those suites are, but I'm pretty sure it's not 200 people.
Yeah, I like on online events, we usually see like 30% of people who register show up, like is a pretty average thing, sometimes 50% depending on the topic.
Yeah,
I feel like in person at Vegas, we're probably looking at 20%. So, but it's still like 40, 50 people.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, still a lot of people. Yeah.
Yeah. When the numbers are high enough, even a single digit percentage is a big deal.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. So I'm excited because that means people are interested in the kind of agentic stuff that we're doing in the platform and just get to share it and hopefully light some fires.
No, absolutely, Chris. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it as well. I'm excited to see you out there.
And you did get the dinner invite, right?
I did get the dinner invite, yes.
Okay, awesome. All right, let's get to it. We missed a couple episodes here because we've been busy. This one's a little dated at this point, but I do want to talk about it.
This one won't get old for a while.
So Hugging Face disclosed a security incident in which attackers gained access to part of its production infrastructure through an intrusion that the company says was conducted end-to-end by an autonomous AI agent system. According to the disclosure, the attackers obtained unauthorized access to a limited set of internal data sets and several service credentials. At the time of publication, the company was still assessing whether any partner or customer data had been affected and stated that any impacted parties would be contacted directly. Hugging Face reported that it found no evidence of tampering with publicly available models, data sets, or spaces, and also verified that its software supply chain, including published packages and container images, remained uncompromised. The company emphasized that the incident differed from previous cases because both the offensive activity and much of the defensive investigations relied heavily on AI systems. The attack originated in the data processing pipeline, where a malicious dataset exploited two code execution paths, a remote code dataset loader, and template injection in a dataset configuration. This enabled code execution on a processing worker, after which the attacker escalated privileges to the node level, collected cloud and cluster credentials, and moved laterally across several internal clusters during a weekend. Hugging Face characterized the campaign as being operated by an autonomous agent framework that executed many thousands of individual actions across numerous short-lived sandboxes while using self-migrating command and control infrastructure hosted on public services. The company noted that this matched the type of agentic attacker scenario that the security industry has been anticipating, demonstrating how AI-driven offensive tooling can automate complex multi-stage intrusion campaigns at machine speed. In response, Hugging Face closed a vulnerable dataset code execution path that enabled the initial compromise, removed the attacker's presence from the affected clusters, rebuilt compromised nodes, revoked and rotated affected credentials, and began a broader precautionary rotation of secrets. Additional cluster guardrails and stricter admission controls were deployed, while detection and alerting systems were improved so that high severity events would trigger rapid responses regardless of the time of day. The company also engaged external cybersecurity forensic specialists to assist with the investigation, review existing security policies and procedures, and reported the incident to law enforcement agencies as a precaution for users. Hugging Face recommended rotating access tokens, reviewing recent account activity, and contacting its security team if they believed they had been affected or wished to report security concerns. The disclosure also focused on how so I got to stop here because I'm almost read all the way through this thing. And it hasn't mentioned at all that this attack was perpetrated by OpenAI's ChatGPT. I can't remember the GPT, but that an unreleased model when it escapes its sandbox to complete some security testing. So why don't we start there?
There's so much to drill into here. There really is. You know, I'm going to be honest. Like, there's there's so many different data points to get into here, Chris, that it's worth spending like a little bit of time to discuss this one. And as we've mentioned here, you know, first off, I decided to pull up this little kind of, you know, gimmicky Frontier Lab agent intrusion thing that someone created before, which I find to be pretty interesting. We'll share this in the show notes for anyone who wants an interesting link here. But Hugging Face provided their own little update here. So first off, as Chris mentioned, for some reason, there's no mention of OpenAI in here. And it should be mentioned that this was OpenAI driven based on everything that we've read and everything that we've learned. The mask up here, and I'm just going to call it what it is. The mask up here was that OpenAI and Hugging Face came out with, you know, some sort of, hey, we're going to work together as a consortium and we're going to work, you know, improve AI security, so on and so forth. And I akin that very much to like, you know, someone lights a fire, someone sets your house on fire, and then comes back afterwards and is like, let me help you with better fire protection. Oh, and by the way, the matches are still in my pocket and stuff like that, which I find to be a little bit odd. Chris, the reason I frame it that way, there's a few points worth zeroing in on here. Number one, as mentioned, this was an intrusion against Hugging Face, but it was perpetrated by an AI that was able to escape the sandboxes that it lived in. So I view this very much as like a primate, you know, like this, I mean, it's an AI version of Planet of the Apes, like developed enough intelligence to escape the container that it was inside of. And then, you know, kind of marched on its way towards world domination. I suppose we're happy that it just went after Hugging Face. Right. But here's where I get a little bit dismayed by the way that this was portrayed out, Chris. And this is one of the parts that I tend to focus on the most about this. How the AI did what it did, got it. Cool. Super powerful. Understood. Mythos level. Got it. Adjective here. Got it. Here's the concerning part. Hugging Face even called out directly, we weren't able to use the frontier models that came after us for security and for detection and for forensics and for IR, because those frontier models are themselves protected against doing that type of stuff. They had to resort to GLM 5.2, an open weight model, on their own infrastructure in order to perform this investigation. Now, let me just back up here. You've got a compromised entity forced to go outside of publicly available frontier models and run a model on its own infrastructure to analyze its own intrusion on its own infrastructure. Folks, this violates every law of incident response that we've ever had. And unfortunately, this is the position that they were stuck in order to get this done. And, you know, I don't know if what I'm asking for here is like an IR mode or something, but Chris, you know, I gave a firefighter example a little bit earlier, or, you know, matches burning your house down and things like that. But just imagine the situation where like the house catches on fire, you call the fire department and the fire department is like, oh, we can't tell if that's a test fire or if it's a real fire, therefore we can't help you out. So you call in a private fire company to help you, and that private fire company is funded by whichever government, you know, wants to fund private fire companies. And then the legitimate one turns around after the fact. It was like, oh, actually, why don't you and I pair together? You know what I mean? And it's just this whole debacle of a story came about. And I'm not calling for less restrictions on these models. I'm trying to identify the predicament that all of these restrictions and all of the situation has created. And I think it's going to be a pretty important topic for folks next week at Black Hat for sure. But this idea of frontier models refusing to assist in the face of security is a really big issue, because as the incident proved, if you take off the guardrails and take off the kid gloves, it is fully capable of being an adversary. Which means, stands to reason, Chris, it would also be fully capable in being a defensive tool, right? So it's a little bit of a weird predicament. And the thing that's kind of caught me, or I should say, like, rubbed me the wrong way about this, has really just been this emphasis on like, no, frontier models, don't do that, don't do that. And it's like, well, behind closed doors, you let them do that. And you got caught, semicolon, this time, ... question mark. Like, how many times has this happened before? Is it the first and only and we just caught it because it was so loud and proud? Or are we in another situation where like, oh man, let's hope the light never shines in that corner over there. Delete everything. And that's the part that really kind of concerned me the most, Chris, is I have a hard time believing that this is the first time an AI was able to escape out of this, because I feel like when they're wrapped inside of these sandboxes with very, very limited network controls and whatnot, and apparently the adversarial AI had to like build its own exploit in order to get out and everything like that. That was like the story that was told. And that type of knowledge right there, I don't think came about like, oh yeah, this is only here with Mythos or 5.6 or whatever it is, right? I look at that as, hey, we're training a shadow model that has these capabilities, and it finally proved it was capable of doing a thing outside of, you know, confined. So I'm going a little bit conspiracy theorist here for sure, but it's just one of those things where when I read about it, it's kind of like, you know, in summary, some of the big concerns I have, the incident response portion of this was handicapped 100%. Nope, can't do that. They had to turn to an open model in order to get that done. The open model had enough experience or training, if you will, in order to be in order to assist. Like that's the other thing, is like the power is there. The power is there. It's just not harnessed, or it's gated on frontier models. And then we're told you can only use frontier models. So it's creating this weird predicament, Chris, in the IR/DFIR world, the SecOps world, which is like, the power is here, but you're not allowed to use it because we can't tell if you're good or bad. But if we use it for bad, well, then we just turn around and make it good. And it's just like, that really doesn't sit well with me, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I'll make a slight clarification there. So they weren't necessarily working together. OpenAI was running their AI against the Exploit Gym, which is a benchmarking tool that Hugging Face has. Mm-hmm. And if I remember from some of the stuff I read earlier, the AI found a 0-day in the sandbox gateway and escaped from there, and then found another 0-day on their way into Hugging Face. So it wasn't quote-unquote malicious. It was just trying to do really good on the test, and figured out the best way to do it was to break into Hugging Face and alter the results on the back. And it's like one of those 1980s hacker movies where the kid breaks into the school and changes his grades and doesn't have to go to summer camp.
Weird, right? Really weird.
So yeah, super interesting one. I couldn't help but feel like it might have been a bit of a publicity stunt, but I'm going to choose to believe that marketers would never do such a thing.
We would hope.
All right. I feel obligated to read about these ones just because there is so much of the internet built on it. Attackers are actively exploiting a newly disclosed pair of critical WordPress vulnerabilities that, when combined, allow unauthenticated remote code execution and full takeover of vulnerable websites. The exploit chain, dubbed WP2 Shell, combines a couple CVEs. One's a SQL injection flaw in WordPress core and a logic flaw in the batch REST API. While the SQL injection issue normally requires authentication, the batch REST API bug bypasses those checks, allowing attackers with no credentials to execute arbitrary code on default WordPress installations. The vulnerabilities affect WordPress version 6.9.0 through 6.9.4 and 7.0.0 through 7.0.1. WordPress released fixes on July 17th and enabled forced automatic updates for affected sites. The vulnerabilities were discovered by Searchlight Cyber using GPT 5.6 Sol Ultra during vulnerability research. The researchers said AI enabled them to identify both flaws and develop the complete exploit chain in about 10 hours, a process they believe would have taken far longer without AI assistance. After public disclosure, proof-of-concept exploits quickly became available, making large-scale exploitation straightforward. Researchers also noted that reproducing the vulnerabilities with frontier AI models required only minutes to hours once technical details were public. Exploitation began almost immediately after disclosure. VulnCheck verified more than 24 unique proof-of-concept exploits within days, while Watchtower observed attackers rapidly progressing from credential theft to full remote code execution. Its honeypot network recorded tens of thousands of exploitation attempts and more than 100 backdoor administrator accounts created by different threat actors. Attackers commonly installed malicious WordPress plugins to execute code remotely, steal credentials, or download additional malware. The attacks have been opportunistic, targeting organizations of all sizes across multiple industries. Researchers advise organizations to assume vulnerable systems may already have been compromised, even if they have been patched. In addition to updating WordPress, defenders should inspect systems for unauthorized administrator accounts, malicious plugins, and suspicious files. Security experts note that the exploit chain is especially dangerous because it requires no stolen credentials, phishing, or vulnerable third-party plugins, allowing attackers to compromise default WordPress installations through a single unauthenticated request and automated attacks at internet scale. So yeah, this is a bad one. I know there's a lot of WordPress instances sitting out there. People get ideas for websites or businesses and they throw up a default installation, then they get busy and it never gets patched and it just sits there waiting for something like this. Spawn camping CVEs. This is going to be the new trend.
It's never going to end for us, I think. I mean, first off, like, let's go ahead and remind everyone here. This is not this is not WordPress kind of going awry or losing it, if you will, right? This is something where very, very interesting vulnerability has kind of just taken everyone by storm. I think just, where WordPress features in here, Chris, is a extremely widespread piece of software. And that's what I wanted to kind of drop in for everyone. Widespread piece of software, lots of visibility here, and thus lots of potential attack surfaces as well. A couple of proof of concepts came up, WP2 shell. I know we are a couple of weeks behind on this one, maybe a week or so behind on this one, just due to the spread here and whatnot. But interestingly enough, it's one of these situations where we've got a huge widespread reach. We've got an issue with CVEs, POCs rapidly being exploited, and then it kind of becomes that race that we've talked about before, Chris, that patch race, if you will. Where it extrapolates, just so folks understand, is the security update gets announced, gets released. That amplifies things on a few magnifying glasses. And then it gets even worse because then people start developing more code, more POCs, more things come up. And as mentioned here, Volnchek said that on Sunday, July 19th, 2 days after the bug disclosure, there was more than 24 unique POC exploits happening there. 24 unique POC exploits there. And that just is crazy, followed by tens of thousands of exploit attempts. So, Chris, really easy to see the extrapolation here. Obviously, patching is going to be the name of the game for everyone who's been affected by this. But I think it's an excellent case study in just how quickly exploits can propagate, just how quickly adversaries can jump on the opportunity, start scanning and looking for vulnerable instances, and then just hammering with all this power, just like, check, test to see what's going on. But if you've got WordPress, patch it. You need to.
Well, it's pretty wild too, though. In the article, I realized they talk about force patching. I didn't realize that was a thing that they were able to do, which is, I know in the past that's been a very touchy subject for lots of folks out there, but yeah. I can see us moving into a world where that might have to become the norm just for things to stay safe.
I think it's one of those things where we got to understand a few more of the like the auto update / pushing capabilities. I think if there's an opportunity to offload some of that, Chris, or if there's an opportunity for folks to sign up for kind of like a forced push update or something, that would be like a super, super useful capability to have. And maybe some sort of a service or something where patching can be like offloaded a little bit and can say, hey, I'm going to run an instance. I want you to just keep the thing up to date, very similar to like a SaaS model style contract or something like that, where, maybe it's more like software as a service plus where you subscribe for a patching service in addition to what you're running. And there's probably a business model here somewhere, Chris, of like,
well, yeah, I've talked about this recently because like I do think one of the biggest areas that we're going to have to innovate in the near term is going to be around the speed of patching problem. But like anybody who's run IT operations knows, like, patching is scary because you can take down like business systems and it can cost money and time. So it's done cautiously, which is part of why these things take time. But my thinking was like, well, if we could reinvent everything or start from zero, if we had everybody running virtualized environments, we could then patch things in virtual environments, run them through production tests using AI, and then deploy them out to machines in a, you know, I think what would be a fairly stable way, but it would require some pretty severe re-architecting of organizations, or, you know, I think new ones going forward could start this way, but I'm on my soapbox again. So.
That's okay. Nothing wrong with being there.
Yeah. Because, yeah, it's a real problem. And I can just see this getting worse and worse, at least in the next couple of years. Well, AI finds all the flaws written by human code. And Max actually had an interesting comment the other day when we were talking about some of this stuff. And he thinks in the not too distant future, you're not going to have humans allowed to write code because there's 80 years of proof that they write buggy code. And as the AI kind of takes over, you know, orchestrated by humans, but through AI for security reasons.
I don't know, man. I've seen 80 years of humans writing buggy code. I've got 8 days of AI writing extremely buggy code. And I don't know which one I'd rather review. I think AI builds code faster, so there's a kind of a trade-off there. But the problem is, same with scale, Chris, right? For your 200 signups for the workshop, 20% is still a big number. Buggy code.
But AI gets twice as good every 8 months. So
the problem is that the amount of code that they ship, that's still a significant amount of bugginess. But yeah, I hear you.
Yeah. All right, I'll get off the soapbox. Next up, hackers have stolen user data from two separate online platforms, AI music generator Suno and gig work platform Paidwork, exposing tens of millions of user accounts, according to analysis by the data breach notification service, Have I Been Pwned? The Suno breach occurred in November 2025, but became public earlier this month after 404 Media reported that attackers had obtained both source code and user data. According to the report, the stolen source code showed that Suno had been scraping music and podcasts from platforms including Deezer, YouTube, and Genius. Have I Been Pwned identified 55.3 million unique email addresses associated with Suno accounts in the leaked data, along with phone numbers and tens of thousands of Stripe payment records containing names, physical addresses, purchase amounts, card type, expiration dates, and the last four digits of payment cards. The second breach targeted Paidwork, a platform where users complete small jobs for payment. Attackers claimed to have compromised the company in March 2026 and alleged 11 gigabyte database containing user information was leaked. Have I Been Pwned analysis found 23.3 million unique email addresses in the data set, along with names, password, hashes, physical addresses, date of birth, phone numbers, bank account numbers, financial transaction records, and user profile information. The leaked database was claimed to contain information on roughly 22 million users. The report notes that the exposed information differs significantly between the two incidents. While Suno's breach included customer contact information and partial payment details, the Paidwork dataset contained a broader range of personally identifiable and financial information, including password hashes and banking information. The combination of personal, financial, and authentication-related data increases the potential value of the leaked information for cybercriminals and highlights the different types of sensitive information stored by online platforms. Security Week reported that it contacted both Suno and Paidwork for comment regarding the incident. At the time of publication, no response has been reported. The breaches add to a growing list of large-scale data exposure incidents affecting consumer-facing online services, with Have I Been Pwned continuing to show us when this happens. Yeah, I'm pretty sure I had a Suno account back in November, so I should probably go see how I logged in.
Hey, we should all, I think, be careful with that. 55.3 million unique email addresses. Hat tip to Troy Hunt for always doing the good work for us and spreading the good message and the good word here. 23.3 million unique email addresses. Just crazy in the Paidwork breach there. I mean, nothing to say other than, wow, pretty significant data breach. Tens of millions of user accounts, folks. There's a lot of words to be said here. Don't reuse passwords, because if one site gets compromised, you don't want to have that lead to multiple other sites, number one. Number two, we obviously want to be in a situation where we're protecting credentials as much as we can. And, you know, this may be an opportunity to utilize like kind of those pseudo email addresses or something like that, just to prevent some of the automated scraping and that kind of stuff from happening. But other than, hey, big breach, something to watch out for, change your credentials, folks. If you've got shared passwords out there, you don't want to get, you know, you don't want adversaries to have insight to all these.
All right. Last one for today. Iranian state media claims that the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps has launched another cruise missile attack against Amazon Web Services Bahrain data center, stating that the facility was destroyed in retaliation for recent U.S. strikes on a nuclear plant under construction in Darkovan, Iran. According to the report, the attack was part of an escalating cycle of military action following the collapse of the June 17, 2026 ceasefire between the United States and Iran. The article notes that this is not the first strike targeting AWS infrastructure in the region, with previous drone and missile attacks having already forced Amazon's Bahrain region into a prolonged outage earlier this year. The article states that Amazon's Middle East data centers were previously damaged to the point that the ME-South-1 Bahrain region entered hard down status between late March and early April. The last AWS health dashboard update reportedly indicated that the Bahrain region remained unavailable. It remains unclear whether Amazon has begun restoring the affected facilities or whether the latest reported missile strike caused additional physical damage. The renewed attacks are said to have been launched after the U.S. targeted Iranian military forces following attacks against American personnel in Jordan, with the IRGC citing those strikes as justification for targeting AWS again. Despite the reported attacks on physical infrastructure, the article says Amazon's cloud services have continued operating by shifting customer workloads to unaffected regions. According to the report, Amazon has not released any public update on the status of Bahrainian facilities or ongoing repair efforts. This highlights the resilience of hyperscale cloud infrastructure, where workloads can be relocated to maintain service availability even when individual data centers are impacted. The article concludes that American technology infrastructure across the Middle East remains at risk as long as the conflict continues. It notes that the IRGC has publicly threatened additional American technology companies, including Microsoft, Apple, Google, and OpenAI's planned $30 billion Stargate data center in Dubai. Oof. The report frames the latest alleged attack as part of a broader escalation that could continue to affect cloud infrastructure and data center operations throughout the region if hostilities persist. So yeah, this is old by now, and I actually think I saw another news article on a strike on AWS today or yesterday. So I'll look that up in a second. But I do think this is another leading edge of the type of targets we're going to see in conflicts going forward in the world. You know, data centers have become not only like a target for activists, but also military, because so much of our infrastructure, like the things that we do, our businesses, you know, society runs through these things. So they make a very high impact target.
Yeah, no, 100%, Chris, and just you know, kind of a reminder for folks here, we've dealt with this before. We've dealt with situations where we've talked about, you know, this specific thing where Iranian forces are launching kind of retaliatory attacks on U.S.-run organizations, U.S.-run data centers and stuff like that. Just if you're in the region, just be careful, obviously, right? You really, you know, want to understand what your presence and digital footprint looks like. I want to take this from like a cyber defense perspective, looking at and understanding what your presence looks like in the region and data centers. If you've got data in there, if you have physical locations there, you've probably already been on high alert. And then utilizing that CTI to help you either position, posture, transition off, or, you know, get to a more secure state, which is what I think the goal is for everyone, really. But, you know, it's a good call out, Chris, and certainly something for folks to just be aware of as this conflict looks like it doesn't have a clear end in sight or an ending anytime soon, let's say.
Yeah, so I just looked up the news article, and July 24th, Iranian forces fired projectiles that hit Amazon's data centers in Zalak following an earlier attack on 22nd of July in the Bahrainian telecommunications code. So that, I think this article is even from earlier than that. So
right.
Amazon's been getting a lot of flack.
So it's happened again, is what you're telling me.
Yeah, and will probably continue to do so.
Yeah, absolutely. Chris, we don't have a debrief on this one, but I wanted to share this with you and share this with everyone else who's out there, because it has come up quite a few times for us here. I'm happy to just introduce this one and let you know what it's going to do to us in the future.
Oh,
Google Threat Intelligence Group, a.k.a. formerly Mandiant Intelligence, is revamping their nomenclature for threat actor naming. So, Chris, not only are we done with the APT and Finn names, but now we have to get familiar with Castle, Ion, Neptune, Relic, and Comet. In addition to all the other stuff that's out there.
Oh my goodness.
Well. Yeah. So I'm going to be walking around Black Hat watching to see if they're also creating figurines and stuff like that, very similar to the spiders and pandas and bears that we see from the CrowdStrike team. But just an FYI for everyone, if you hear me and Chris dropping some even more silly, funny names during some of these debriefs over the next number of months and years, you know where that came from. Threat intel groups can on a whim just decide, you know what, we're not going to do that anymore. Now we're going to do that. And the rest of us have to just adjust.
Yeah, so this year I'm bringing a giant suitcase full of t-shirts and swag that we've got kicking around my office here. But I will be going home with that suitcase empty, and I have a six-year-old boy now, so I will be on the hunt for cool figurine hacker-style swag that a six-year-old boy might get inspired into technology from. So if you're listening and you have such swag, please do ping me or come by the Lima Charlie booth. I would love to swap some t-shirts for some swag.
Please do. Bring them all. Chris wants them all.
Yeah. All right, folks. Thanks a lot. We'll see you again soon.
Awesome. Thanks, Chris. See ya.
Cheers, bud.